been a pleasure coming before the board. I hope to see you again. Like I said, I've learned something, and it's a pleasure to meet the new faces and some faces. Good to still see some old Suffolk County names sticking around too, I will say that. And I appreciate the work that you gentlemen do and you women do. I wouldn't have your job for nothing. It's a highly stressed job, but I want to commend you on how you handle Suffolk County. You've done a good job.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You all have a good summer.
You too, sir.
Talk to you again, man. Thank you.
Yes.
Next case, please.
Our next case is number 11,995, Clem LLC, seeking variances from the height requirement, sections 115-82 and 115-179 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located at the southwest corner of Coastal Highway Route 1 at the intersection with South Street. The 911 address is 19178 Coastal Highway, Rehoboth Beach. The zoning district is C1. The tax map is District 334, Map 13, Parcels 157 and 158. Specifically, the applicant is seeking variance from the 42-foot height limit, varying between 2.49 feet and 8.49 feet for the building and 13.74 feet for a rooftop HVAC unit. And we received 0 letters of support, 1 letter of opposition, and 8 mail returns. We received the letter of opposition from Darlene and Walter Baker, who state that they own a property at 408 Cascade Lane, Rehoboth, Delaware. They were unable to attend the meeting this evening, but would like to offer a written statement regarding the hotel that would be built near their condo. Their property and the surrounding area is beautiful as is, and they would not like a hotel 200 feet from their condo that could be as tall as the owners propose when all is said and done. If a hotel must be built, please keep it within the guidelines for building heights that are now in place. Thank you for the opportunity to express their opinion regarding this matter. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You
do
got this to us
before. Good evening. Can you state your name and address for the record?
William Klemkowski, 316 Salisbury Street, Rehoboth, Delaware, 19717.
Michael Mioli, 7 Johnson Branch Court, Rehoboth, Delaware.
3562 Shearer Road. And do the three of you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. And when you speak, can you just identify yourselves for the record? Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. McGee, gentlemen.
Good evening, sir.
For the record, my name is Jim Fuqua. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown in Rehoboth Beach, and I represent the applicant. The applicant is actually Big Swell Hospitality, LLC, and with me are Mike Mioli and Bill Klemkowski, who are the principals of the LLC. There was an exhibit packet that had been submitted that I'll be referring to in my presentation. As was stated, this is a variance application from the 42-foot height limit for a new hotel. Mr. Mioli previously owned and operated the Hampton Inn on Route 1 for about 13 years, and the partners here plan to construct and operate a new hotel on the west side of Route 1 on a parcel of land containing 2.15 acres, and that is the parcel that's currently operating as the site of Jake Seafood on Route 1. The parcel is rectangular in shape with a kind of a panhandle portion that's about 200 feet long by 100 feet wide. This parcel, as well as all of the land nearby along Route 1, is zoned C1 General Commercial, which permits a wide variety of commercial and service business type uses. And that specifically permits hotels and motels. And you're all familiar with the area, and as you know, there's a wide mixture of grocery stores, shopping centers, retail businesses, and other hotels near the property. I think most of us consider a hotel to be a hotel, but within the industry and with many major national hotel chains, it is a bit more complicated. My clients are planning to construct a Hilton Hotel, and even within the Hilton Hotel Company, There are actually 14 different types of hotels or brands of hotels. The hotel plan for this site is the newest Hilton brand, and it's called True, T-R-U, True by Hilton. The first one of these new hotel brands were actually opened this, or was actually opened this year in Oklahoma. 10 of this type of hotel were planned and expected to be open this year, and 75 in 2018. This new brand hotel targets a mid-scale price range with a younger, more technical and social media savvy clientele. In the information I submitted, Exhibit A and B were articles describing the background of this True by Hilton hotel, again, just for background information. Now, a major part of a brand is its design and appearance. A brand is intended to be recognized and be identifiable. So whether you're in Oklahoma or in Vermont or on Route 1, a True by Hilton hotel will look like another True by Hilton hotel. And that is part of the power of a brand. You know what to expect wherever you may find that brand. Exhibit C of the exhibit packet shows a picture of the prototype 98-room True by Hilton hotel. And if you look at that photograph, you'll notice the distinctive architectural features along the roof line. And that, again, is just the typical prototype for this type of hotel. Exhibit D is a site plan for the proposed hotel. And that basically is the hotel that's being planned for this site. Now, as stated, because of the 42-foot height limit requirement of the zoning ordinance, this prototype hotel structure would exceed that limit. And if I refer to Exhibit E, this is the elevation exhibit. As to the specific variances being requested, the deck of the roof of the hotel is 44.49 feet in height, so that would require a 2.49 foot variance. So that would be to the roof deck. And you can see from that elevation exhibit, you can see various other elevations. Specifically, there's other heights being shown at 46.57, 47.19, 47.86, 49.57, and 50.49. They're all for different features of that of the roof here. All of those heights refer to design and brand-related architectural features. Those features do not create habitable space or really even usable space. It's just the specific design for this True brand hotel. So for all those architectural features, we're requesting a variance up to a maximum of 8.49 feet to permit those design features as indicated on the elevation exhibit. And then lastly, you'll see the one feature that says 55.75. The hotel's HVAC equipment would be housed on the roof, and that would have the maximum height of 55.75. To be safe, we are requesting a variance of 13.75 feet for the HVAC equipment. However, under section 115-179 of the zoning ordinance, there are authorized exceptions from the height requirements, and that is Exhibit F, I believe, in your packet. Those exceptions include, among other things, cooling towers, tanks, and water towers. Now, as you know, the language of the zoning ordinance is almost 50 years old, and that's part of the original language. I think HVAC equipment is similar to the intent of those exceptions. So even though it may be excluded, we are requesting a variance to avoid any possible confusion in the future as to that equipment. The proposed hotel will not alter the essential or adversely impact the character of the area. The land is zoned C1. Hotels are permitted. In fact, there is a Comfort Inn located adjacent to the site and several other hotels located in fairly close proximity to the site. The hotel will be improving the stormwater management of the site, which right now is entirely paved with impervious surface, and some of that area will be removed and replaced with pervious surface to permit some groundwater recharge. The preliminary site plan for the hotel, showing the layout of the buildings and the parking area, has already been reviewed and approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission on April 6. Copies of those minutes and the approval letter are Exhibit G in the exhibits that were submitted. And basically, that leaves us now with this request tonight for the height variance. The exceptional practical difficulty involved in this application for an area variance results from the pretty new uniform design requirements for all the brand hotels, the impact of the zoning ordinance because of the 42-foot height restriction, and recent changes to the ordinance. And let me give some examples regarding the standard height of these brand hotels. The Holiday Inn on Route 1 is approximately 46 feet, and that is the same height as the Holiday Inn Express in Seaford. Now, I understand that is under the city zoning in Seaford, but what I'm saying is that Holiday Inn, I'm sorry, the Holiday Inn Express there is also 46 feet. And also, there's a Comfort Suites in Seaford. Again, that is under the city zoning, not under county zoning, but that building is 50 feet. On Route 1, in the general area of this property, the existing Hampton Inn is 48 feet, and the Heritage Inn is 45 feet. The newest hotel in the area on Route 1 is a Marriott brand hotel. That's the Fairfield Inn. That's on the north side of Route 1, just slightly north of this site. And that is 52 feet in height. And there's another hotel that hasn't been built yet, but in May the board approved a height variance to permit a proposed 47-foot Days Inn on the north side of Route 1, just slightly south of this site, basically across from this site and across from where the adjacent the hotel next to us is. And that was application of Destiny LLC. It was the board case 11954. Now, my point is just to show that the standard brand hotels have this height that exceed 42 feet, and basically none of these brands would meet the provisions of the ordinance as far as the 42-foot height. Mrs. McGee, you wouldn't recall this because you weren't on the board at the time, but the other board members may require that there used to be an ordinance that provided certain public and semi-public structures could have a 60-foot height. But that provision has been amended, and there was confusion as to whether it was really was intended or what it was intended for, public and semi-public. It was being used for commercial buildings. I think the consensus of the council was that it should be more for like governmental buildings, hospitals, schools, and things of that nature. So that ordinance was amended. And again, the other members may recall there was a meeting, an unusual meeting of the county council, the Planning Commission, the Board of Adjustment, the county attorneys, and Lawrence Lank. I think this is maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Was it 3 years ago? Mm-hmm. And where that issue was discussed, and there was this different options of what to do. The conclusion was we want to limit that provision to, as I said, government buildings and things of that nature. And for anyone to exceed that, it would require a variance application before the board. Mm-hmm. So in summary, these are the unique circumstances that we're dealing with. A typical 98-room prototype hotel cannot be built within the variance or without a variance. It will not fit within the 42-foot height limit. Certainly, a floor could be removed from the hotel, and you'd have a hotel with a reduction in rooms of approximately a third, but that would make the proposal economically impossible to do. It wouldn't work with that type of a density and number of rooms. The circumstances were not created by the applicant. The national brand hotels, the height limit exceeds that as permitted in the code. For the reasons already stated, the variance will not be out of character with the very busy commercial nature of the area. And will be similar to other hotels that are located in the area. The increased height itself will have no negative impact on nearby properties. Quite frankly, it most likely won't even be perceivable to the public. The difference is just not something you really perceive to see. It will provide customers for nearby businesses. It will create 25 full-time positions, and it will result in construction costs in the economy of about $11 million. The height itself has no impact on adjacent properties, including the Comfort Inn. The new hotel, however, will create competition for the Comfort Inn, and Mr. Tucker is undoubtedly going to be presenting the Comfort Inn's position to you momentarily. The variance, in our opinion, will permit a brand hotel at a height similar to other hotels in the immediate area and similar to the recent variance that was approved by the board for the Days Inn. And the variance we're requesting, based on this brand design, is the minimum needed for relief. The last point I want to make is that the some language from a court decision that the Delaware Supreme Court issued in the Quick Check case, and I know you're familiar with that case. It comes up frequently in board matters. And what the Delaware Supreme Court stated in that case is that the inability to improve one's business or to stay competitive as a result of area limitations may be a legitimate, exceptional, practical difficulty that would justify a variance. And the court went on to say that such a practical difficulty exists where the dimensional change is minimal. The harm to the applicant if the variance is denied is greater than the impact on the neighboring properties if the variance is granted. Now, I believe that the information we're presenting is the precise considerations that were stated by the court to support that type of a requested variance. Again, the nature of this zone, you're all familiar with it. It's very busy. It's very busy in zone commercial. It has a varied mixture of uses, including hotels, again, many of which exceed the 42-foot height limit. The variance itself will have no negative or adverse impact on neighboring properties or on their uses. Without the variance, this hotel, which is a permitted use in the zoning district, could not be built. And we believe that that does establish the practical difficulty supporting the request. Again, I think there's a distinction to be drawn between the height, the impact the height has, and competition. And I think that'll be a decision that you'll have to make. Mr. Mioli, is everything I just presented true and correct to the best of your knowledge?
Absolutely. Okay. You want to come up to the
appearance? Just identify yourself for the record.
You would, please.
Bill Tomkowski, yes, it is.
Okay.
Mike Mioli, yes, it is.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, and Mr. Mioli, is there anything else you'd want to present?
Yeah, there's a couple of points.
get out of your way.
First of all, I think it's important to note that working with these companies, Hilton and Marriott, in this area, they've been very stringent on a number of rooms that they will allow us to have, a limited number of rooms. In this case, Hilton has stated that they wouldn't approve anything less than 90 rooms. And I think Marriott typically follows that, just based on the demographics, based on the economics of the building. I think it's also important when you look at the economics of this, you look at the value of the land. And so, you know, at obviously a million and a half plus an acre, you know, if you were to cut a floor off of this thing, the economics of it just doesn't work. And I think it's most evident when you look, the Comfort Inn, to the best of my knowledge, is the last three-story hotel built in this county going back almost 20 years. So from if we go to the Microtel here in Georgetown, Mr. Fuquay stated a few hotels in Seaford, they're in the municipality, but in the county. So you have the Microtel, you go down to Bethany, you get the Holiday Express, you get the Holiday Express in Rehoboth, the Rehoboth Hampton Inn, the Heritage Inn, the Sleep Inn, the Fairfield Inn, and just recently approved the Days Inn across the street. Virtually every single hotel is four stories, and there's a very legitimate reason, because three stories just doesn't economically work. So I don't think it's certainly the county's design to stop hotel development in the county, and that's why these hotels, many of which Mr. Fuquay has referenced, have received variances for these reasons. And it's really mainly the branding of these hotels. They really want to brand themselves and make themselves unique. Also, mechanical standards over the years have changed, where floors have had to kind of reach themselves up a little bit. They've grown a little bit by floor to allow ductwork, because the way they duct these buildings now is very different than it was, 18, 20 years ago. So that's something I felt was important that you all know.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Gentlemen, other than any questions you may have, that's everything we have to present.
We'll start here. Ms. McGee, do you have any questions?
They've owned the property since 2003?
The property,
Yes. Bill Konkowski. I purchased the property in 2002 and opened Jake's in March of 2003.
And that's what's there now?
Yes,
because I was trying, it would have been nice if we'd have gotten this before tonight. I was trying to go through this and listen to him, too. So.
Well, it was submitted last week.
Okay. That's
all right. Any questions further? Mr. Ricker?
No questions.
Okay.
Agree with Mrs. McGee that if we had that documentation, what I'm trying to get each time is to make sure we get that documentation. That's okay.
Mr. Ricker, if I could just state for the record, I realize sometimes I submit some fairly minor stuff, and I submit that at the hearing, but I knew there was more detailed information than I normally submit, so I did submit that to the office last Tuesday or Thursday.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Burtman?
Yeah, on the cooling towers. So each room's this is a whole different ball game. A cooling tower is going to do each room. I mean, cooling the whole hotel down. You don't have an individual.
You mean like window air conditioners?
Yeah, with the,
PTEX.
Right, and we have, the architect is here and can probably speak to that better than me. Yes, each individual room has package terminal air conditioners in the rooms.
Okay.
But those, back years ago, those units actually created the makeup air throughout the corridors as well.
Okay.
And over the years, hotels had mold problems because of that. So owners would shut the dampers off in the wintertime, and so they'd forget to open those things up in the summer, and there would be mold problems. And I lived that with the Hampton Inn. We had that problem. So now these rooftop units now are used to bring in the makeup air into the building.
Into the hallway, okay.
Right, so now your hallways have had to grow for that ductwork.
The ductwork, okay, that's where your cooling towers and all that's coming from
yes,
for
sir.
That. That's where your height's got to get to for that.
Yes,
that's the reason for it, the height.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mills?
I think in regard to that, and I think you're probably correct in your assumption of needing what you put in tab F for subsection 115-179, speaking as a professional, a cooling tower is a part of an HVAC system. It specifically, and so technically, the ordinance does state that and not an HVAC system. So I think you're correct in
including
that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously including it's old language, and it's what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, and the ordinance probably should be changed to say HVAC, because rarely do you find in our area a cooling tower anymore.
Yeah. It should be. Okay.
Yeah, I Mr. Fuquay, I know you were talking about the design features and some of the industry standards.
I'll tell you.
And what is the uniqueness as far as physical characteristics? Are there any issues with being able to build on certain parts of this?
Other than some of the acreage, as I said, is a panhandle, which really wouldn't be usable for anything but parking. But the rest of the property is not, it's rectangular, so I can't say there's any extremely unique feature at the site, other than the economic reality of the type of use proposed, the cost associated with it, and the fact that the ordinance itself with the 42-foot height doesn't really conform to the industry standards for this type of hotel.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Okay. Hearing no further questions, are there any persons here that are in favor of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Sir, you come forward, please.
Good evening, Chairman. Good evening, board members. My name is Sean Tucker. I'm an attorney with Tricker, Biddle, and Reith. I'm here tonight representing Resort Hotel LLC, which is the property owner for the Comfort Inn property, which is directly next door to the parcel you're considering this evening. I handed to Ms. Walls, just when you were getting started, some material that we put together. I apologize that you're seeing it tonight for the first time. My client had engaged, or thought he engaged, other counsel, but a business conflict arose last week that resulted in me being hired literally this past Friday. So this was actually completed today, and I apologize for its late delivery. I did provide Mr. Fuqua a copy with it as the hearing started as well, as we brought it down with us this evening. As Mr. Fuqua had mentioned, or his client had mentioned, my client's property, which is a three-story hotel, and currently has 96 rooms, does fit within the zoning code. It fits within the zoning envelope, and it operates, and it's functioning, and it has survived. There were some other hotels mentioned tonight, but it's important to note that there actually is an exception in your code that allows people to go higher when they have more land and provide a greater setback. So, for example, the property across the street that was mentioned, the Marriott Fairfield at 52 feet, I don't believe you granted a variance for that based on our research. That height was obtainable under an exception to your zoning code that was actually referenced in the application in passing under Section 115-179B as in boy, which allows you to increase height above 42 when you have extra land and you have a greater setback. So I think, I know Mr. Fuqua mentioned one five-foot variance in particular where he cited an actual variance application, but at least one of the others, there was that owner had additional property which appeared to allow that owner to exceed the height limit. What I did in my submission to you this evening, and if I may, I'll walk you through it in summary form, is I relied predominantly on a recent decision by our Superior Court in Sussex County that was handed down in June, which I understand has not been appealed, which is currently the law in this jurisdiction regarding how the five factors at least were applied by the Superior Court. And I walk through those in my letter, but if I may, in summary form, I'd like to walk folks through that tonight, at least in terms of our legal analysis, compared to what the court has said about these types of variances. The first factor, as I'm sure you know, is this variance triggered by some physical condition on the property causing a hardship. And I know Mr. Fuqua mentioned the one parcel that is somewhat of a panhandle, but that is a parcel that was later acquired and added to this site. It was not part of the original parcel. There's actually two parcels, and that panhandle parcel was added. But if you look at the application before you, the written submission that was made by the applicant, what they articulate in writing is that land construction costs and site design were driving this situation, but those are not items, in all due respect, that are unique to the land. Those are the types of issues developers face when they develop, and depending on what they're developing, that cost goes up or down. So I would submit that there's nothing in the record tonight, at least not substantial evidence, that there's something unique or special about the land that triggers the need or calls out a hardship that would be relevant for a variance. And that certainly is one of the five factors. All the five factors are supposed to be met by the applicant. But I would submit the record is missing that in terms of something unique and specific about the land or the characteristic of the land itself that is triggering a hardship. The second factor, of course, is that the property cannot otherwise be developed. Well, it is developed. There's a restaurant that operates on it today. It's been there for quite some time. It's the Jake's restaurant. And there's been no evidence that that's failing. There's been no evidence that I've heard that suggests that even if it was failing, an alternative restaurant could not succeed there. So there is not, this is not a situation where there is a question as to whether the property could be developed or not be developed. It has been developed, and as far as we know, based on the evidence before us, it has been operating successfully. There's also, of course, nothing that prevents the applicant from building a hotel, like my client did, within the 42-foot envelope. So that is a possibility. If the applicant wanted to switch to a hotel, there's nothing that, at least in terms of a hardship, I would submit justifies going above the 42 feet. Third factor is the self-created hardship that the court talks about. And this is the Jungle Gym case that I'm referring to that I attached to the handout. I would submit this application before you is a example very much like the Jungle Gym case of a self-created hardship. You have a restaurant that is operating. There's no evidence that it is failing or in danger of failing. There's no evidence that other restaurants could not be successful there. And there's no evidence, I would submit, substantial evidence that another hotel could not function there within the height limit. This is self-created within the meaning of that word. And the fact that the applicant is partnering or leasing to a hotel chain of their choosing that has certain specs, respectfully, I don't believe that is consistent with the legal standard, because if it were, any property owner could simply say, well, I want to bring hotel chain Y or Z, and they have a minimal 120-unit requirement, and therefore the zoning code should be set aside, or the rules and regs should be set aside, and we should grant a variance because this particular private entity has a minimum standard for their particular hotel or their particular restaurant. I would respectfully submit that is a slippery slope to head down, and suddenly we could have third-party private companies, hotels, restaurants, dictating what they will and will not build and having that drive what variances are appropriate or not, and I would submit that is a very dangerous slope. If the applicant is asking for it on behalf of a tenant or a buyer, then it is the applicant's self-created hardship, in my opinion, and I think that's consistent with the reading of the Jungle Gym case. Regarding alteration to the character of the area, which is the fourth factor, and I will concede this one's a little bit of a closer call, at least in our opinion in the analysis, but in fact you do have the one neighbor who did file an objection, who couldn't be here tonight, that we saw on the record about the height affecting the residential character behind the property and the low building height. But also the hotel my client operates or leases, again, it's at the 42 or actually a little bit less. And so the character of the area, the immediate area, is not over 42 feet. And as you probably also noted in the record, there was a waiver given on the parking of about 22 spaces. And while that has already, as I understand, been approved, where is that overflow parking going to go? I was not aware, I did not see a parking study that explained why that additional parking that would otherwise be required by code is no longer necessary. But in all likelihood, that parking demand is now going to bleed over through the interconnection to my client's property, because these properties are connected through a cross-access easement. So if this additional floor and the additional units trigger the parking that would be normally anticipated by your zoning code, then that parking is going to bleed over to my client's property, who is a code-compliant property in terms of height. Mm-hmm. And that overflow will be adversely potentially affecting our parking field. Lastly, the requirement that the relief sought be minimal. And in terms of the evidence that I've heard and that I've seen in the record by the applicant, it seems to me that, again, this Marriott brand is driving what they think is minimal for them. But again, I would submit there's not substantial evidence in the record that no other hotel could survive here, no other hotel could be built here, and that this is the absolute minimal relief necessary. It may be for the Hilton True to come here. But again, in all due respect, I don't think that hotel chains should be driving what should and should not trigger the variance requirements, because they have their own private minimal standards that they seek to impose on others. Lastly, I'd also make a final argument in the papers that I've filed with you tonight about what we see as a sort of an unfair advantage situation that would be created if this variance were granted. And let me explain that a little bit. As you know, the variances are supposed to be granted when there's a hardship, when there's a genuine hardship. And business competition, I don't disagree with Mr. Fuqua, there could be instances certainly where business competition is a relevant factor. But to equalize that business competition is generally what I have seen when that factor has been embraced by boards. In this case, if you look at the acreage at issue and density, and we did take a look at that at page 9 of our report, or of our submission to you, our acreage that is on my client's property is about 3 acres, which yields about 31 rooms per acre, if you broke the acreage into rooms, because there's 96 units. Mr. Fuqua's client proposed this 98 units, and I have 1.8 acres, but we heard from Mr. Fuqua it's actually 2.1, so I'll go with his number. I think we may not have included that panhandle that's now there that wasn't in the original plan from years ago. So if you assume his client has 2.1 acres, he would essentially be seeking a 47% increase in density above what my client gets with 3 acres. So if you go acre by acre, the density that this applicant would get in terms of number of hotel units per acre goes up greater than my client's unit per acre. So my client has more property, more overhead that would normally come with that property, taxes, et cetera, maintenance. But the applicant, if this variance were granted, would get a higher density per acre and actually 2 more rooms that I would submit potentially put him at a business advantage. And we actually did submit an affidavit from a lady who actually operated my client's site for about 6.5 years, who I spoke to, who offers the opinion that if you have a smaller site with similar density, all things being even in terms of overhead, that site is going to be more competitive because its overhead is less and it can be more creative in its pricing and potentially have a business advantage. And so I would submit that the last thing that we would hope the board would do would grant a variance that might offer a business advantage to someone who has less acreage but actually a greater density per acre if they get their variance. So that is a thumbnail sketch of the letter that I've submitted into the record. We firmly believe that at least 4, likely 5 of the standards aren't met, but I will concede the character one. I think you could debate both ways a little bit given the intensity of the commercial on the Route 1 corridor, certainly. In terms of the other 4, we would submit they've not been met by the applicant, and by law the applicant is required to meet each one individually. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any questions from members of the board for Mr. Tucker?
I have no questions.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, sir.
You said about the parking. That's Comfort Inn right there, right below yours?
Yes, sir.
Right there.
Yes, sir.
So that parking goes through Jake's, too?
Yes, there's an interconnect. Well, they're not supposed to use it, as I understand it, but there is a connection point. If I may walk over.
Yes, sure.
Here's the connection point. So everybody's taking access here off of Route 1. You either go into Jake's or you go into Comfort Inn, which is my client's property. You have a 4-story hotel here with a parking waiver, which you already received of 22 spaces. That parking overflow is almost certainly going to go in my client's direction.
So there's no way of closing that off?
No. In fact, there's a recorded easement that provides that right to the applicant that dates back to the original subdivision in 1995, I believe.
So that hotel and your hotel got to use the same?
Both use the same access.
That's correct, sir.
That's
yes. Branded.
Yep.
So that's going to make a difference?
Yes.
Parking and everything else.
That's it. If there wasn't the waiver, it might be a different argument, but certainly, and maybe Mr. Fuqua has a parking study he can put into the record before you all, and I acknowledge that parking waiver has been granted, but the practicality is he's asking for greater height to add an extra floor, which adds about 22 units, and those folks are going to have to park someplace. And more than likely, I think it's fair to assume to some extent they're going to be parking on my client's property, and he's going to be taking on that additional burden because of that additional density. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, he is compliant with your code in terms of height.
Okay.
So he is, in our opinion, being put at a competitive disadvantage if this variance were granted.
And another question. You said something about the height of other hotels.
Yes,
sir. Come from us?
I have not had time to individually look through every file. I did have somebody come down this morning, but a lot of these records are older and they're not available, unfortunately. So we tried to actually pull each file, but I'm relatively certain that the Marriott Fairfield directly across the street that was mentioned by Mr. Fuqua's client at 52 feet, I don't believe they came in front of you based on what I could find to date. I believe they're using an exception or used an exception in your zoning code that lets you go up above 42 feet if you have greater setbacks. So they bought more property, I'm assuming, which allowed them to have greater setbacks, and they were able to go up higher.
Ms. Cornwell?
There is a section of code. There is a section of code that allows for greater height with a greater setback, but it's typically for mixed-use buildings. I was not here when the Fairfield went through the process, so I can't, without doing research, address that situation.
Well, mixed-use, what do you mean by?
Typically, it's a mixture of residential and non-residential uses.
Okay.
Are you familiar with, you're talking about on Route 9, Fairfield? No.
I'm not exactly sure.
Where's Fairfield?
It's on Route 1, near the cemetery.
Yeah, Route 1 heading north.
It's near the intersection.
But it has office space and other uses.
I would have to look into that.
They have a convention or a meeting room or meeting some type of thing.
It's meeting,
and
yeah.
This is not.
Got a meeting.
So when you have that, you're allowed to do that then, right?
Well, and without opining on that specific question, because I haven't looked at that either, and Mr. Fuqua referenced this in his presentation, there was a change in how the county interpreted its height ordinance.
Yes.
Right.
And I'm not sure if some of those or all of those or none of those fell within the kind of carve-out exception there, public or semi-public use. There was some, conjecture at some point about whether certain things should fit in there or not. County Council, though, passed an ordinance tightening that up, I don't know, 2 years ago or so.
2 or 3 years ago.
So it's more recent. So when some of these were built or went through the process, I don't know. Right. They could be under the old rules versus the new rules.
Mm-hmm. Had to be, because I don't remember that coming from.
I think that the one that does come to mind specifically was the one on Route 9. I believe the Vineyards was mm-hmm. one that came up under that guise. And mm-hmm. perhaps Mr. Fuqua might remember that more specifically. The board could ask questions of him, I'm sure.
Okay. Just addressing this specific issue, when the Vineyards was being done, Vineyards at Nassau?
That's what I was thinking, yeah. On Route 9.
Yeah, if you read the articles about that, it says some attorney came up with this idea. Well, I was the attorney that came up with the idea. And what the code said was that public or semi-public buildings could exceed the 42-foot height requirement up to 60 feet if they increase their setback that Mr. Tucker was referring to, okay? And I mean, that had been there for, again, going back to 1970 when the zoning was created. If you then looked at the definition of public and semi-public, it just basically said what you think it would say, if it's open to the public. So at the Vineyards, there were going to be commercial on the first floor that was open to the public, mm-hmm. and we said it fits the definition. I don't know whether it was intended or not, but I didn't write the definition. Mm-hmm. And we submitted that to Vince Robertson, and he gave an opinion that, yes, maybe it wasn't what was intended, but that is what the definition says, and you could do it. So up until that point in time, I don't think anyone had ever, I don't want to say taken advantage of, but
challenged,
no one had ever interpreted it that way.
Or challenged it.
And then after that became knowledgeable, it was used in some other places, and one of them was the Marriott. The Marriott said, it's open to the public, and they used that. And actually, that's what resulted, I think, in the meeting that I was referring to with the council and the board and the planning commission and the attorneys to talk mm-hmm. about, is this what we want? What do we want to do? And my understanding is it, and I haven't dealt with it again, but my understanding was there was an amendment under the code to do away with at least the definitional part of that and to limit it to governmental buildings, hospitals, schools, things that you would think traditionally more as a public type building.
I was in all those things, and everything you said is true, Mr. Absolutely.
I hope so.
It worked right on up to the, you worked right on up to when the county council and the three bodies, I mean the three bodies, you know, the commission, and we got together, and that's what prompted that situation.
Yeah, what prompted it was the Marriott.
That's correct.
Yeah, the Marriott got the publicity, and that's what prompted it. And there's an article from the Cape Gazette that that's the only reason I knew all about what happened. But again, there's been a progression, was that it was permitted by ordinance, and then you had the hotels having this additional height.
Additional height. Yeah.
I, for the most part, we think because of this ductwork that had to go for the hallways, but I don't know that as a fact.
I think we even had the fire marshal and the state highway there. We had five bodies there at that time.
And then then that's where it is. And again, it's probably to go somewhere in the future. Maybe there has to be some adjustment to the height for these standard type hotels and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. There is shared parking, obviously, but that can be dealt with, you know, lots of times when I've been to places, they give you something to put on your dashboard that says you're staying at that place or you're not staying at that place. Mm-hmm. And I don't know this for a fact, but I was told, and obviously the records could be checked, but I was told that the, Comfort Inn? That the Comfort Inn had a parking modification also, as I think a lot of the hotels do. The requirement for parking in hotels is 1.5 parking spaces, right, per room. The reality of the industry is that, you know, it's not really that often you have two cars at a room.
Plus your employees.
Plus additional for a number of employees and things like that. But anyway, that was my comment.
Chairman, closing just very briefly, I do think, hearing Mr. Fukui's history, and I know he knows it quite well in this jurisdiction, maybe there's a legislative solution that should be considered to rectify this change in interpretation that apparently happened between assistant county attorneys at some point. But I do think case law is very clear, most recently with the 4A case at Jungles Gym, where the court said if the property in question can be reasonably utilized or is being reasonably utilized without the existence of the nonconforming structure sought, the applicant cannot establish the necessity of the variance. Reasonable use may exist even if it is not the applicant's preferred use.
Thank you. Question. Your parcel that you're representing, how many acres is that?
That is approximately 3.
And it's the same as the parcel that we're looking at, because the planning and zoning letter states on a 3-acre site, zone C1.
Now, I think that's an error. I think Mr. Fuqua even, I think, would acknowledge, I think he said it's 2.1 acres.
2.1.
So there is about, if the variance were granted, it would go up to about a 47% increase.
Is that true? No.
It's closer to being 2.1 because this parcel currently is about 1.92, and then if you include this parcel, it would be a little slightly over 2 acres.
Well, isn't the triangle part of theirs too, with their stormwater management?
Right. Everything highlighted in yellow is the 1.9. And then this is also included with this property.
Okay.
Yeah, the stormwater management property is actually owned by my client.
The question I have, you got 3 on there. You've seen the same thing.
Well, here it is.
That's it. That's
county what I'm document.
So, yeah, that's what I was getting ready.
Okay, thank you, Chairman.
I have a question.
Do you have meeting rooms at your facility? No, I know you don't. I'm asking.
I'm just checking my client for a minute.
No meeting rooms.
For the record,
no.
My client indicated no meeting rooms.
No conference room.
Nothing. Sir, if you need it, you want to come up and be sworn in so you can make this part. Sir, do you want to
Sir,
you need to be sworn in to make it part of the record, please.
State your name and address for the record.
Stephen Silver, 2602 West 16th Street, Wilmington, Delaware.
Do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give us the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, sir.
No, thank you.
No, thank you, too. Oh. It's good nice for you.
Your question.
Do you have a conference room, meeting rooms?
We have a large breakfast room that doubles as a conference room after breakfast hours.
Okay.
So you do have a conference room.
And that's the only amenity that you offer to a group that would want to stay there.
That's correct.
Okay.
But it's
swimming pool.
Okay.
But it's limited to hotel guests and not necessarily to like a conference room for businesses to come and.
No, sometimes the local groups come and use the conference room or use the breakfast room, and it's converted to a conference room for meetings, trainings, and those kinds of things.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I may have just have one question for Mr. Silva before he goes away. Mr. Tucker made some statements. Do you affirm those as true and correct?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
He did slip up one time and said in Marriott when he should have said Hilton, but other than that, he was okay.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Sharp.
Mr. Tucker. Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Tucker, I have one question, please.
You had stated in regard to the five standards for granting a variance that it could be argued that standard number four, that dealing with the essential character of the neighborhood, that it it seemed to be a use that would be in character of the neighborhood. So are you also agreeing there's 3 points there, and one of them being that it will not substantially or permanently impair the appropriate use or development of adjacent property?
I will concede you could argue that one both ways in terms of character, because there certainly are other hotels in the area that we've learned about tonight that possibly were allowed to be built that large because of a prior interpretation. My client, of course, being the most immediate neighbor, is within that envelope, but I understand Mr. Fuqua's argument about that. In terms of adverse impact, I would still say that there is a reasonable, short of a traffic study or parking analysis submitted by the applicant, I think there's a reasonable assumption that overflow parking, there is a risk of overflow parking onto my client's property when we switch from the Jakes to a potential four-story hotel, and that would have an adverse impact on my client's parking that it currently offers. And absent a study showing otherwise, I think that is something the board certainly should consider.
So you feel it would have a substantial or permanent impairment on the appropriate use of your property and therefore doesn't meet that standard? Is that
correct? To parking, yes, sir. Okay. As to overall character, I'll concede that there could be arguments both ways.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
One more question. Yeah, so you have any problems with Jake's parking in his parking lot?
Mike Neoli. I think actually the reverse is true. I mean, I think you could even look at that picture. The picture that showed the hotel, you can tell by the shadowing what time of day that picture was taken, which is in the morning, if East is over here. There's four cars parked in Jake's Seafood, and Mr. Klimkowski has regularly allowed employees of the Comfort Inn to park in those spaces. But the reality is if you count the spaces on the Comfort Inn, you'll see a 96-room hotel with 113 spaces. At 1.5 at your code, they should have 144. So they have a much larger variance granted to them than we do. I think just the opposite would be true. If both those hotels were full, the Comfort Inn would be bleeding over to ours.
Mr. Maioli, you've been before the board for a hotel, the Hampton Inn and the McDonald's, correct? You're the owner of those?
Correct.
Okay.
Sold the Hampton Inn.
And so we get granted a variance for that hotel to share parking, with the assumption that typically during the day you would be restaurant, in the evening you would, okay.
Because they had very different flows in their
So similarly, business. That's what's happening with Comfort Inn now.
It's probably worked very well for both of them, quite frankly.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
And just to make one clarification on that, and I think my client may want to add something too, but note that the original, we came here today to review the files, because they go back to 95. My client was certain there had not been a height variance for us. But we wanted to see if there was any other waivers or not, but we just couldn't access the files to be sure, because it's obviously been since 95. So I can't speak to whether there may or may not have been a waiver like Mr. Fuqua's client has received. What I can say is that I did look at the 95 record plan or site plan, and Jake's was shown as a pad site. So if my client did obtain a waiver, and we're just not certain at this point, that would have been in the context with the Jake property being a pad site, which as we know, Jake's ultimately was a one-story building. A four-story hotel is a much different animal. And certainly I would expect that that would have been given some consideration if the use was going to be more substantial. But Mr. Silver, do you have a comment about the parking usage and overflow?
Two things. First, what you said is exactly correct. You know, we've had a very friendly shared relationship with them. They're compatible uses. We sold the restaurant pad to them for that purpose because it's a compatible use. We thought it would do very well. The Jake's Seafood Restaurant is a favored place to go by our customers and guests. It provides great service, it provides great food, and it works out very well. Having two similar uses or two identical uses side by side will create problems for us as it relates to parking. Number two, I do not believe that we ever received any variance as it relates to parking. If you look at, I don't know what if the aerial view shows, but if you look to the back of our site, you'll see that there's plenty of parking back there that has not been improved.
Okay, that's all parking back here?
Correct. So in terms of, I don't know exactly how many sites we have, but I know that if you go down to the end of our site, there's a large area where there may be some overflow parking from time to time, but it's not generally used. It's more used for groups that are here for sports at the beach, and then they hang out in the back and they play ball back there.
Okay.
Yeah, they do.
Alrighty.
So, Thank you.
So your argument is not so much the height, but the parking spaces.
It's both. I think that the concern about overflow parking goes to the one factor that Mr. Mills was drilling down on a little bit. That's under character, but it's certainly the height as well, and the fact that it's being a self-created hardship.
So what reason would you have that you would want, you had sold that pad site in 2003? And I've lived in this county my whole entire life, and mm-hmm. we're changing. Mm-hmm. So that was 14 years ago, and Sussex County has changed quite a lot.
Yes.
So why won't that change? So in C1, what we're looking at tonight is the height a board.
And what I would argue is we would be perfectly fine with this applicant building a hotel of 42 feet or less in height, just like my client did. That is the zoning code that was adopted by county council. And unless there is an undue hardship that has not been self-created, that is the code that my client complied with and that we believe the applicant should comply with.
Okay.
Thank you.
All righty. Hearing no other opposition, then chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, there's been a lot of testimony here on both sides, and it's been very informative. Okay, to a point now, and also we have documentation that we must review, and I would like to take case number 11,995 and table it to our next regular meeting, which would be August the 7th.
And have a second to that motion?
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Rickards and a second by Mr. Workman that we table case number 11,995 until our next regular meeting, which will be August the 7th, 2017. Okay, all those in favor of the motion? Mr. Mills?
Aye.
Ms. McGee?
Aye, but if we have had this information, we could have made a decision tonight.
Thank you.
Mr. Rickards?
Aye.
Aye.
And I'm Mr. Calloway. So by a vote of 5-0, case number 11,995 will be tabled until the next regular meeting.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to recess the board for about 5 minutes.
Thank you.